It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set. He's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes. Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow, John Schmelk with you, talking New York Giants football and everything around the National Football League as well. We take your calls at 201-939-4513. We also take your inquiries on Twitter at hashtag or number sign or pound Giants chat.
Whatever you prefer.
Whatever you prefer, exactly. Lance, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, John. How's everything with you?
Crazy day in the NFL yesterday, by the way.
Nuts.
This whole Bill Callahan thing, to me, just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I think Tim Brown's off on his rocker a little bit here, and Jerry Rice isn't helping things either.
Yeah, clearly those two are close, and they're supporting one another, but Bill Romanowski, who was on that team, Rich Gannon, and a lot of other guys have spoken out and said that Bill Callahan wouldn't do that, and that's a complete stretch. Why would a guy try to ruin his reputation by trying to spoil the Super Bowl? To me, it doesn't add up. There's some missing element there. And the fact is, you know, whether he changed the game plan or not, you know, these are NFL players. They go out there, they're paid to execute. So whether you need to throw the ball 60 times or you run the ball 11 or you run the ball 44 times and you throw the ball 20 times, you should be able to execute the plays. I mean, I think it's a real bit of a stretch. They're trying to find excuses. And my bigger question is, why are we talking about Super Bowl 37 10 years after the fact when we're less than a week and a half away from Super Bowl 47 between the Ravens and the Niners?
Not to mention the fact, Callahan, by the way, also issued a statement yesterday saying, you know, this is defamatory. You know, there's no way I did this, number one. Number two, doesn't the game dictate how many runs and passes you call? I mean, you
Absolutely.
Prepare during the week to run your plays. Whether they're runs or passes, you prepare to run the plays that you're going to run. So you get to game day, and sometimes, you know, the game dictates what you have to do. And the Bucs went up big early in that game, and it's not like the Raiders, when they're down 21-0, can pound the ball, pound the ball, pound the ball. I just thought it was a very, very strange thing.
Well, and they lost their starting center, Barrett Robbins. He had gone down to Mexico the night before.
And that connection, by the way, that Jerry Rice tried to make, that Barrett Robbins went off his rocker because they changed the game plan. Because they're passing it instead of running. It's not like they ditched the playbook and they're, you know, put a whole new offensive system in on Friday. That just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Robbins supposedly, according to what Brown and Rice are saying, got so emotional that he wouldn't have enough time to memorize the new signals and the new calls.
No, but there were no new signals and calls. That was the point that they made in the article, actually, that the reason, and that this has been a known fact about that Super Bowl for a while, that Callahan didn't change any of the signals or the verbal commands off of Gruden's system when he was there, and that really screwed up the entire game, and that's really what ended up hurting them.
Well, Gruden had a familiarity, as you just alluded to, John, with the Raiders system, considering he was the previous coach and Callahan served under him. So, I mean, I think clearly going into the game, they had to figure that Gruden knows the personnel well enough that he is going to prepare accordingly to get his team in a position to capitalize on Gannon's mistakes or any other mistakes that the Raiders made. But to get back to the point that you were talking about, Bill Callahan could have said to his team on Monday, we're going to run the ball 50 times, and we're going to work Tyrone Wheatley, and we're going to work Charlie Garner. But if they,
Zach Crockett, don't forget the great Zach Crockett.
Yes, the multi-dimensional Zach Crockett, yes, who could play fullback, yes, and do a little bit of everything.
Very good, yes, he could.
So he could have laid out to his team that we want to run it down the throat of the Bucs 50 or 60 times. But as you mentioned, you know, a Rich Gannon early interception and the Bucs go up 14 points, hypothetically, you're not running the football 50 to 60 times anymore. You're going to have to throw. That is impossible to game plan for. You may have your ideal layout of how the game's going to play out in your mind, but Tampa Bay's defense capitalized early, goes up big. You're going to have to change on the fly. That's just a game of football.
It is. Look, there's no question about it. And again, it's not like he threw out the playbook. It's just a matter of what plays you call and when you call them. And I'm actually brought up the play-by-play of that game. I'm just curious here. By the way, our giant question of the day, and we'll, of course, take your giant calls. I just wanted to talk about this a little bit before we moved on here. The giant question of the day is, what do you think Mathias Kiwanuka's role should be next year for the Giants? Defensive line, linebacker, how is he going to be best utilized by the Giants in 2013? All right, the Raiders got the ball actually second. The Bucs got the ball first. Brad Johnson actually threw an interception on the Bucs' first possession of that game. Raiders took over at Tampa's 36-yard line. They start the game with three straight passes, but they get a first down. Charlie Garner runs the ball. Gannon runs it for 2 yards and a sack. So in the first 6 plays, they run it once, pass it 5 times, but they get a field goal out of it. So they're up 3-0, okay? Now the Bucs go down, kick a field goal. It's 3-3. Gannon throws 2 passes, gets sacked. Bucs have the ball, score 3-3. Bucs go 3 and out, okay? Next, Raiders drive. They run it with Crockett, run it with Crockett on 3rd and 4. Gannon throws an incomplete pass. Bucs get it back. They punt again. So with 1:35 to go in the first quarter here, it's still 3-3, and it's about 9 passes to 3 or 4 runs at that point for the Oakland Raiders. And then the Raiders get the ball back. They throw an 8-yard pass to Charlie Garner, which I'm sure is a short one out of the backfield. They run it for no gain. 3rd and 2, Rich Gannon is intercepted.
So it's still a close game after one quarter.
Correct. And then the Bucs only get a field goal off of that. So it's just 6-3 at that point. Raiders get the ball back, a 9-yard pass. Garner gets 2 yards of first down. Then Gannon's intercepted. And then it goes on and on from there, and it starts to get a little bit ugly. But the Raiders actually, just FYI, the score is only 13-3 with, let's see, how much time is left? 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. So the game's not that bad. And was it heavily pass as compared to run at points? Sure. But at the same time, when the Raiders did run the ball in that first half, this was supposed to be some, like, you know, grind it out, ground and pound type of game here. They ran the ball 10 times in the first half. They gained 18 yards. So even if you're trying to run the ball, it didn't exactly work. And that was the point. I'm trying to remember who had the quote in the paper about it. The Bucs were calling out the Raiders' plays and knew exactly where their runs were going, and that's why they weren't effective.
Well, that gets back to John Gruden being in that facility for years and knowing all the personnel and the team very well. So clearly, you know, he could have anticipated what Bill Callahan was drawing up, and he had his players in the right position to capitalize.
And the worst part, all these conspiracy theorists now who are out there, that, frankly, they're usually gamblers who've lost a lot of money on the NFL over the course of their lives, and they get mad, oh, the refs fixed the game, the game's fixed. No, idiot, it's football. Anything can happen. You get games wrong, it happens. That's how it goes. These games aren't fixed, okay? It happens. But now all these guys who bet on the Raiders back then, I remember I was on the air talking about that game, and I thought the Raiders were going to win that game big. I thought they were going to actually win that game by a few touchdowns, and I look like a fool because of it. But, guys, let's not be stupid here. Bill Callahan's not throwing a Super Bowl because he dislikes the Raiders organization. So you're telling me the Raiders organization annoys him so much that – A, if it did, wouldn't he have quit before then, number one? Two, he's going to destroy his own legacy and a chance to win a Super Bowl for himself and get a Super Bowl ring, something every coach dreams about their entire life.
And jeopardize his career.
And jeopardize his career by throwing a Super Bowl because he's annoyed and doesn't like the Raider organization. Come on.
And the other thing that I don't understand is why Tim Brown and Jerry Rice are now coming out now. And then on top of that, Barrett Robbins, whose story has been well known for years and has been in trouble with the law, he could have easily thrown this out. It would have been a stretch to begin with, that part of the reason why I went on that rendezvous in Mexico the night before was because I was so caught off guard by the fact that the Friday before the game, they changed all the plays. He's never touched on that at all.
No. And Rich Gannon, that was the guy who made the quote. About the game planning that I remember and not changing the signals of the line of scrimmage. And he supported Bill Callahan as well, that he's a good man, wanted to win the game. So I think Jerry Rice and Tim Brown need to kind of have their head examined. And the best quote from Jerry Rice, I don't think Bill Callahan liked me very much. Well, it might have been Jerry, because at that point in your career, you were washed up and you weren't very good. Maybe that's why.
Well, Tim Brown was up there too. I mean, there were a lot of veteran receivers on that team.
Tim Brown more effective than Jerry Rice at that point, though. in my opinion.
No. Nobody's Zach Crockett. It's hard to match that firepower. All right. EL can't be that good.
201-939-4513. Our question of the day, what should the Giants do with Mathias Kiwanuka next year? Linebacker, defensive line? Lance and I will give our opinion in just a second, but I want to get to our phone calls and go to Charles down in Charlotte, North Carolina. Charles, good morning.
Hey, guys, good morning. I called in a couple weeks ago, and like I say, with Kiwanuka, I think he had, 30-something tackles this year? That's totally unacceptable for a linebacker. That's a disgrace, man. I mean, that guy, he pretty much was lost this season. There were game after game after game to where you didn't even know what Kiwanuka was.
No, Charles, I agree, but I wouldn't get too obsessed with the numbers, only because the Giants played their base defense so little this year, and they were in that three safety nickel package so much. Frankly, Kiwanuka didn't have a lot of opportunities at linebacker. But that being said, even when he was out there, you're right, he didn't exactly put a stamp on a lot of games this year.
Yeah, I mean, I hardly seen the guy. I'm just gonna be honest with you, man.
Yeah,
I hardly seen the guy. And then he just—I'll be honest. In years past, when he's played linebacker, we asked him to move. It seemed like his attitude was a little different with that. You know, it was more or less, well, let me do it for the team. It seemed like going into this year, it's like he gave up on the position a little bit. Yeah, I'm out there at linebacker, but I'm not really. You know, I've seen plays where he was jogging. I've seen plays where he was letting guys just go right by him. I'd rather kick him back down. We're going to need help at the D, on the D, you know, D in position, rotation and everything. He's a pretty good DN. You know, the last time he was down there full time, so I would like to see him go back down to DN. I really want this Giants team to really focus in on linebacker. I mean, first round. Come on, guys. We hadn't had a first round linebacker since Carl Banks?
Yep.
Yeah, Carl Banks.
Correct.
I mean, that's crazy. I mean, come on. We did this patchwork thing for a while. And I understand that in this day and age, you know, in the 4-3, you know, your D-line is one of the most important components, if not the most important component on defense. I get that. Getting to the quarterback as a passing league, yada, yada, yada. Our D-line is good enough now to where we can focus in on other areas. You know, I would really like to see that linebacker core restructured, maybe bring in a Victor Butler. You know, draft a middle linebacker first round. Even if it's, I draft that guy with the fake girlfriend.
Teo. Well, but Charles, remember, they have to be worthy of a first round pick. You're not going to stretch and say, well, we need a middle linebacker, so there's one available at 19, and we're just going to grab a middle linebacker. You need to know for sure that they're worthy of a first round pick.
Right, and I mean, I've been doing my research now. I mean, I'm not just throwing names out here, but I mean, I think that guy. I just look at all the mocks and just who he is, and you know, I'm looking around, but I think it's a guy from Georgia. Not the main. It's like two guys from Georgia. One is like a top.
Ogletree is one of them. Yeah.
Yes.
Ogletree.
Correct.
I think the Notre Dame guy with the fake girlfriend. I think I seen him in a few first round mocks.
Correct.
It's a few guys. I've been doing my research or whatever, but I would like to see, you know, maybe bring in a free agent that's on the come up. I thought that Tony Pierce. Free agent move was great. You got him when he was coming up. He didn't already peak. A couple of guys that came after him, Kubica Mitchell, another, you know, the guy after him, the black guy, I can't remember his name, but
Danny Clark.
Those guys, yeah, those guys to me had already peaked. They were decent guys when they were, you know, in their prime, but they had already peaked. And although they did help out, that wasn't what we needed. We didn't need no pack. We didn't need a patchwork guy. I would like to bring in Victor Butler, somebody who's young, on the come up. He had a very impressive year this year, for his limited time he was in. I would like to bring in somebody like that, you know, somebody of that caliber. But again, you know, I think that linebacking core is first for me, and then I like to get that secondary. I just don't think Corey West. I think his time is done. I think he reminds me of Terrence Newman. When the Cowboys gave him one last year to see if he can rebound, when your speed is gone and when you've lost a step, you lost.
Yeah, but Charles, the one funny thing about Terrence Newman, he bounced back this year and actually had a very good year for the Cincinnati Bengals under Mike Zimmer, and he played a lot better for the Bengals this year than he did for Dallas last season.
But look at it. I think it was a scheme thing. Now, I'm not saying Corey Webster has to leave football, but I just don't think he fits what we're trying to do in New York. Terrence Newman, he wasn't a man-to-man guy anymore because he had lost a step. But let's remember now, Terrence Newman was known for being a fast cornerback. When he came into the league, he was one of the fastest cornerbacks out there.
That's true.
He lost his step in that scheme. Now, you throw him in a cover two zoney type thing. Now, all of a sudden, he's back to being Terrence Newman.
Fair point. And he was also reunited with his old defensive coordinator, Mike Zimmer, as well, which I think helped.
Yeah, I just think Corey Webster, I'd like to see us really refresh that cornerback position as well.
Yeah, but Charles, the problem, though, is that if you let Corey Webster go, do you go with a corner in the draft and go with three young guys and roll the dice with inexperience in the secondary? Or do you want to go out there in free agency and spend a ton of money on another cornerback that maybe in 2 or 3 years you're having the same problem that you have with Corey Webster now?
Well, let me say this. I think it'll be enough crop of free agent cornerbacks that, I mean, you're already paying Corey Webster. He on deck for what, 7, 8?
7, I think, yeah.
So, I mean, that's crazy. And, that's crazy for a guy who got burnt the way he did, game after game after game after game and shit. That's ridiculous. And, you got Terrell Thomas coming back for another shot. I think he can do it. I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. Thomas Davis, I'm down here in Charlotte. Thomas Davis has done it. He had a successful season with a third tear of the ACL. So I think Terrell Thomas can do it. He'll still be rusty and need, some time to really, get back in the swing of things. But I like Trent. I like Hosley. I just think that I wouldn't necessarily go rookie, go first-round rookie cornerback or something like that. But I would feel comfortable with Hosley and Prince on the outside. This is Prince's third year. He just needs to stay healthy. When he's in there, he improved a lot this year. He looked good this year when he was out there. I think Hosley really impressed me. For his size and everything, I thought he played like a 6'1" cornerback. I mean, he plays, he plays hard, man. He's fast. He has some really good instinct. I think he's going to get better and better and better. Now, he might be just suited for the slot, and that might just be addition. But personally, I would like to see us get, either corner or – I wouldn't want to go rookie, but I would like to just get a free agent corner and maybe, just have somebody who can refresh that position. Maybe, somebody a little younger than Corey, got a little bit more athleticism than Corey.
All right, Charles.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, right, buddy. Charles. We appreciate it. Charles always brings his A game on these mornings.
He does his research.
He does an
too.
Excellent job. Oh, yeah, he's all over it. Well, Kevin Minter, another inside linebacker, that it could be a first-round pick at LSU, by the way, according to some of the early mocks.
And those are going to fluctuate in the weeks coming, depending on how teams react to their needs and, start to speculate and how guys perform at the combine, too, remember. Still
yeah.
Very early to know exactly. Guys who have a lot of hype coming out of college sometimes underperform.
Haven't even played the Senior Bowl yet, folks. Lot of time to go. And I get you want to look ahead, and we've been doing our research, too, trying to figure out what's going on. But some of the top free agent cornerbacks, by the way, just FYI, Brent Grimes, a guy that's going to be coming back from a very serious knee injury. He was franchised last year by the Falcons. My guess, usually guys like that coming off an injury, the team they were with, since that's who he's doing the rehab with and everything, will sign him to a lower, short-term type of contract, similar to what the Giants did with Terrell Thomas last season. So my guess is that Grimes will stay in Atlanta. They'll try to bring him back. Aqib Talib, another guy. Don't necessarily think his personality, Lance, fits in with head coach Tom Coughlin of the Giants. Granted, he did well with Bill Belichick this year, so maybe he's figured things out a little bit. But I think he's going to get a big money contract.
Absolutely.
Somewhere.
With the way he performed in the postseason, I don't see why not.
Sean Smith, the guy out of Miami who's a younger corner, that might
big
be.
Big corner, though, Sean yeah. Smith. Very big.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he's a matchup problem for a lot of guys. But I think he's going to demand a lot of money on the open market
younger
if the Dolphins don't re-sign him.
Yeah, no question. Kerry Williams out of Baltimore, who's a decent corner, nothing special. Derek Cox out of Jacksonville, can't get too excited about that, but he's only 26. So he's a guy that could get a decently sized contract out there. And then Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, someone in the Giants division who has some focus issues, very talented, very fast, but no one in that Eagles secondary really distinguished themselves.
And there's a lot of mileage on those tires already. with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, too. Keep that in mind.
He's still on his rookie contract, right?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I just feel he's been moved around, didn't do tremendous with the Eagles. I think
that
they expected him to really come in and shine with all the big names that they brought in. I mean, the good thing is he knows the division, so if you brought him in, he's going to be familiar with the Eagles, the Cowboys, and the Redskins. But I get back to the financial constraints. I'm just not sold that the Giants are going to have a lot of freedom to go out and make a big splash in free agency. I think if they're going to improve in that position, you probably have to do it in the draft, or you take a chance and invite some of the guys back that got hurt last year, such as a Bruce Johnson or somebody else who was an unsigned free agent. And the Giants have shown, based on their track record, that they can groom these guys, plug them into the system, and if given the opportunity, they can come in and shine. So that's the direction that I think the Giants are going to focus on this offseason. Plus, you know, based on what the Eagles did, and I use them as the example because they're within the division, you know, they brought in Nnamdi Asamoah, they brought in Asante Samuel, they brought in Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. I mean, did that really work out well for them, Giants fans? And curious your thoughts, feel free to weigh in. I mean, does it always seem to be the right answer that you just go out and you get the big name, you throw some money at them, and all of a sudden your issues in the secondary are solved?
I'll make the argument, actually, very rarely does it seem like the team that makes the big free agent splash in the offseason is the team that uses that splash as a springboard to something really big. Usually it seems that build from within, build their own program up. It just seems to me a lot of times when the guys, teams bring a big free agent in, it never works out quite as well as they would like.
Look at the last two Super Bowl winners, the Packers and the Giants. They didn't make huge splashes from one year to the other in terms of improving their roster. And you look at the Ravens and the Niners this season, who did Baltimore bring in this year that was a huge game changer?
I mean,
big money guy.
They changed coordinators midseason.
Outside
that's
of that,
it.
Though, you know, it wasn't really a personnel. And with respect to the 49ers, you know, LaMichael James, Colin Kaepernick, these are all guys through the draft.
Yep.
They're not free agents. Manningham they brought in, but
Randy
it wasn't
Moss
big money.
And Manningham would be the two guys that they brought in. They paid Manningham enough, but those would be the two guys they brought in. Their entire defense returned from last year. Those are all guys that have been drafted or brought up through the system there.
Those are the teams that succeed in the NFL, where you start with your youth and you build them up, you groom them, you try to bring in some veterans to, you know, round out your roster.
Carlos Rogers, I guess, they acquired as a free agent a couple years ago. Not last year, but he's a guy that came in.
But he's already been with the team for a couple of seasons to integrate himself.
Yeah,
but it's not as if they looked at things in the offseason and said, well, we were one game away from getting to the Super Bowl. Let's really bring in a high-priced guy, whether it be another defensive end, another running back, another corner, and then all of a sudden that's going to be the missing piece and we're going to get to the Super Bowl. That didn't happen.
Well, look at these perpetually good teams, whether it's the Steelers, built through the draft. When's the last time the Steelers made a huge, big free agent splash? They'll re-sign their own guys, but they don't bring anybody in from the outside. The Broncos obviously brought in Peyton Manning, which is a huge deal. But otherwise, those guys are built from within, whether it's Denarius Thomas, Eric Decker. Look at their defense with Von Miller. Those are guys brought from within. No Sean Moreno even, the guy, the running back that came on at the end of the season. He's a guy that they drafted and developed on their own.
The two biggest moves that the Broncos made, one you said Manning, and then a couple of years ago trading for Champ Bailey in the Clinton Portis swap.
But again, that's a trade where you're trading a guy you drafted. So, you know, dishing out all that money to a big guy in free agency doesn't always necessarily work out.
Well, and that's why I keep going back to the Eagles, John. They did that two off seasons ago, and they said, we're just going to really bring in a lot of the big names, the Ronnie Browns, the Vince Youngs, all those corners. And
heck, how about the Jets? They've tried to add guys to that defense via free agency a lot, whether you're talking about Calvin Pace, whether you're talking about the Bart Scotts of the world back, you know, a while ago, Jim Leonard's a guy they brought in via free agency. So it just seems like when you make all those moves, there's a reason teams let guys walk. And it can be purely financial sometimes, but quite frankly, a lot of times it's not. It's partly financial, but also partly, look, we don't think this guy is quite exactly what we want in a player to go out there and win a Super Bowl.
And sometimes the way contracts are structured, it makes it impossible to keep those guys around. Because, you know, a typical NFL contract is not, you know, we're going to sign a guy for 5 years and $50 million, and he's going to get $10 million in year one and $10 million from every year on out. The way these deals are structured is they're so lopsided where the first 2 years he could be getting 30 of those $50 million, and then the back 3 years, it's not nearly as much. But the problem is, with the front 2 years so lopsided, it prevents the team from trying to sign other guys. So, you know, that, unfortunately, the way the NFL works, because of the threat of injuries, players want to reap the rewards of the contract early. Contracts are not guaranteed, so you have to make your money while you can.
201-939-4513. Thomas is on the cell phone. Thomas, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, bud?
Oh, man, I was listening to what y'all was saying about the Giants. Like I was saying, I've been a Giants fan for a long time. For them to get to the Super Bowl and what had happened this season with injuries and stuff, number one, that front defense, they need a middle linebacker, something that's going to reliven them back up again before they can start pushing a little bit stronger toward the quarterback on the rush. The second thing is the secondary. They just was horrible, even though the Prince getting hurt. Still in all, they should have had some kind of backup. I think the only way they're going to be able to straighten that up, like I said, they're going to have to, you know, salary cap and stuff. They're going to have to get somebody who has probably been turned down from another team who wants to prove a point to get back there to straighten that up. The offensive line, they need to protect Eli. I've watched the games where they couldn't protect him. And when Eli doesn't have enough time to throw the ball back there, the interceptions come.
Tom, I'm with you.
Got rid of Brandon Jacobs. We should have kept him.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think Brandon Jacobs would have made much of a difference this year, Tom. But I agree. I think your other three areas of need, linebacker, defensive backfield, and offensive line, I think those are the three areas the Giants are going to look to make the most improvement this offseason.
Okay. I agree with you on that. But the thing is that when we needed by sending Brandon Jacobs to the 49ers, look what happened. They waived him. I think New York would have been better just keeping him like they signed Open Oil to 1 year.
Thomas, hold on. Let's go back to the 2011 season. How effective were the Giants in running the football with Brandon Jacobs and Ahmad Bradshaw? The year they won the Super Bowl, how effective were they during the course of the season in running the football? Were they a top five team on the ground?
Okay, they weren't that good. They were like, 29th?
Correct. So how can you make the point then that Brandon Jacobs is the missing link here, and that's what prevented the Giants from going back to the playoffs?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that when we needed Bradshaw, it was hurt.
So they had David Wilson, and they had Andre Brown before he got hurt. It's not as if they didn't have other options.
Right. He was doing great, but when he went down, I mean, hell, we were in trouble. When that man there got hurt, our record went from where we was at the top of our division to we just started losing games because we didn't have no running game. We couldn't do nothing right.
Well, I think the injury certainly contributed to the ups and downs in the running game this year. But at the end of the day, you hit it on the nose earlier when you talked about the offensive line. If you're not getting consistent push and consistent leverage and winning the battle at the line, it doesn't matter if Walter Payton's back there, Brandon Jacobs is back there,
right,
or Andre Brown is back there. Nobody's going to have success in getting through the holes and being productive game to game. So it starts and ends with the O-line.
I agree with you. And I hated that Sean O'Hara, the one that's on news on sports, I wish he didn't leave. I don't know what happened with him after he won the Super Bowl. You know, he just left. But the things with the Giants need to do right now, and another thing, the offensive coordinator needs, you know, I've always heard this play, Omaha. I hear it all the time, and it just seemed like teams, when Eli calls Omaha, they set up. They already know what the Giants are getting ready to do. You know, they need a new offensive coordinator, and this defensive guy we got, if he doesn't do any good, hell, the Cowboys just got finished firing, what you call him, his brother?
Yeah, Ryan's now with St. Louis.
He just got hired again.
He got hired in St. Louis.
Damn. See, right there, if we would try to get him back in there, I mean, that would have been great because there was some rivalry with the Cowboys. We would have been right in the thick things. Now, we're going on the same thing, the same offense, the same defense. Teams are gearing up for this.
All right, Thomas, well, two things. One, I'm not sure. Put him on hold, do me a favor, Boot. Rob Ryan, number one, I don't think quite fits in the culture around here with the Giants and how he would comport himself on the sideline.
With Tom Coughlin.
Yes, I'm not sure that would work out
Boy.
Too well. Number one, not that he's not a pretty good defensive coordinator, I think he is. Though his numbers in Cleveland and in Dallas leave a lot to be desired, number one. Number two, and this gets to the point you made about the Omaha thing. Thomas, let me explain to you exactly what Omaha means. The only thing Omaha means is that he sees a blitz and he's calling a hot route. Now, here is the trick with the hot route. It's not the same on every play. It's not like every time he shouts out Omaha, it audibles to the same play. Based on whatever play is called, there is a different hot route. It can be a wide receiver quick pass where he doesn't even leave the line of scrimmage. It can be a slant. It can be a fade. It can be a stop. It can be a button hook. It can be an in cut. It can be a drag across the middle. Based on the play, that's what Omaha means. So it's not like it's calling out the exact same audible on every play. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, Thomas. Thanks for the call, man. We appreciate it, man. Great stuff out of Thomas.
A wide variety of topics.
All over the
Thomas.
Map, yeah.
Yes.
He's fired up. It's good.
He is, which is understandable. And you know, I understand Giants fans are still looking for answers. But, you know, with respect to the whole Brandon Jacobs argument, I think that the Giants made the right decision. They wanted to go in a different direction. And they felt that, you know, his time had expired here. And I thought that they brought in a cluster of running backs that were going to fill the void. Unfortunately, it didn't pan out that way because of injuries. And it gets back to the offensive line.
Well, quite frankly, it's not like teams are lining up to sign Brandon Jacobs to a big money contract the minute he was let go either.
Well, he actually couldn't because what the Niners did was they waived him at a time where then there wasn't enough time left in the season for a new one to pick him up.
Well, no, I mean when the Giants...
Oh, when the Giants you're talking about. Yeah.
Waived him.
No, initially, you're right.
There wasn't exactly a laundry list of teams trying to sign him to be their running back.
He was one of the latest free agents to sign a contract.
Well, let me put it this way. Do you think Brandon Jacobs chose the 49ers to be the fifth running back on a team that has four good players in front of him? Something tells you that wasn't his first choice. Something tells me that it's one of the few teams actually willing to write him a check, so he took it.
I would think you're in the right vicinity.
I mean, I wasn't privy to these negotiations, but logically speaking, I know you want to go a good team, and that's always a smart move for your football player. Try to win a ring, which if he was still with the 49ers, he would be in that position. But if Brandon Jacobs went to the Niners thinking he was going to get significant playing time with them, his agent and him did not do a very good job looking at that roster.
And Jacobs also got hurt, too, which didn't help his cause.
Remember,
he got hurt in training camp.
But then he was a healthy scratch.
Yeah.
He was a healthy scratch most of the season.
And then clearly got frustrated, and as a result, the Niners cut ties with him.
And once again, Twitter getting people into trouble, which is never what you want to see.
And the Giants clearly have shown that they don't tolerate that.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of tweeting at it. I mean, Martellus Bennett has had some fascinating tweets over the course of the offseason. That's about the extent of it.
But most of those tweets have not necessarily been related to the team.
Oh, it's no,
been
none his of them
own,
have.
Yeah, it's been his own personal interest type of thing, whereas Brandon
his
Jacobs...
His own personal fantasy world.
Brandon, yes, about unicorns and all that other
yes.
good stuff. Whereas Brandon Jacobs was tweeting things directly related to the Niners.
And football in general, which is not good.
And that's where you have to draw the line.
All right, no question about it. 201-939-4513. Lance offers classes on social media for football players every Monday and Wednesday from 9:30 to 10:30
yes.
in Prospect Park, so you guys can feel
registration
free to stop by.
Has just opened,
yes.
by the way.
And
check out Giants.com for that.
He will be giving out the syllabus first thing next week.
Working let's go, hard on that.
Let's go to John and Chris in New Jersey. John, Chris, what's going on? John, Chris, you there, pals?
Hello?
Guys, what's up?
Can you can you lower your computer?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think the Matthijs Kulukas should stay only defensive lineman and not move to not go back to linebacker.
Okay, what why do you say that?
What do you think that?
Yeah, why do you think that?
He played better in linemen.
Well, he has been more effective with his hands in the ground and appreciate the phone call. I think that was evident at times this season as well as throughout his career. And it gets back to the fact that with OC probably not returning, you know, they're going to call Matthijs Kiwanuka's number. And I think that he will have the opportunity to get back on the line as an every down player, not one of these rotational players. where he could probably make a bigger impact on this team, and then that's going to open the door for another linebacker to slide in. Whether or not that linebacker is currently on the roster or it's somebody that they're going to need to get via free agency or in the draft remains to be seen. But the big question right now is, can they assimilate Kiwanuka back into the mix where he can get comfortable as a defensive end and chip in each and every game? Because Kiwanuka has been used to now all of a sudden becoming a rotational player in Perry Fuel's system, where he's a little bit of a DE, he's a little bit of a linebacker, and sometimes that takes away from the effectiveness of a player.
And even a D-tackle at times,
yeah.
Too.
Whereas some, you know, most players want to know, okay, I'm a defensive end, I'm a defensive tackle, I'm a linebacker, and I know exactly what I have to do on each and every play. If you play a game of musical chairs, it's hard to gain rhythm during the game.
And to Kiwanuka's credit, as a good teammate, he's done exactly and everything and anything the Giants wanted him to do and hasn't complained about it at all.
Correct.
And if you're in a guy who's drafted as a defensive end, you get put a linebacker, and especially when your contract year is coming up, I wouldn't blame you to be a little upset when you're trying to, you know, play your best position and make an impact there, and they move you around, and it kind of screws you up a little bit. I get why you would be upset, but Kiwanuka never said anything. There was never a peep out of him of complaint, and that's to his credit. But you're right. I think he will be a better defensive end if he's playing that position and works there in training camp, and that's how he learns the playbook. Here is one of those tweets from Martellus Bennett that we can't read on the air, but very amusing, showing his derision
yes.
for people who make comments he does not appreciate on Twitter.
Absolutely. Firing back
yes.
through social media.
He is firing
which
back.
Which we always like.
You know, I thought that is a relatively classy way of firing back. It's not too vulgar. You know, I could honestly probably get away with reading that on the air, to be honest with you. I'm not going to take that risk and do it. But it's he's funny.
Oh, absolutely.
Marty B's funny.
He brings his personality to the forefront, which is not necessarily a bad thing. And I don't think it took away from the team's performance at all. I don't think you could point to a part of this season where Bennett was a distraction on or off the field. You know, yes, there were stories about him, but he's just an interesting guy.
He's also a big fan of the twit pick.
Yes.
Yes, very big fan of that.
And whether or not he'll return to the team remains to be seen. Martellus Bennett, as we're talking about a variety of different free agents on this squad, is one of them. The whole tight end spot as a whole is pretty much heading to the open market.
Yeah, that's one of the big decisions the Giants are going to have to make in terms of where they go with tight end. Do you want Martellus Bennett back? Do you try to bring in somebody else? Do you draft another tight end in the first one, two, or three rounds? It's a pretty deep draft in tight ends from what I understand based on what some of the experts out there are saying. So that's a decision the Giants are going to have to make. And how quickly can Adrian Robinson come along, being in his second year at a Cincinnati who they drafted in the fourth round last season?
I thought Martellus Bennett was extremely productive this season, and I think he took advantage of his opportunity. Unfortunately, the hyperextended knee interrupted his consistency. But if they feel, and this is what Tom Coughlin talked about in his final press conference and even in that end-of-the-season interview on WFAN, the blocking. I think that's maybe the biggest question mark surrounding Martellus Bennett. Are they confident in him being that additional offensive lineman moving forward where he can help the run game, he can help protect Eli Manning, in addition to bringing to the table what he can do as a receiver? If they feel good about those two things, then I could see them definitely aggressively making sure that they can bring him back.
Now, I'll point this out, too, and this is just an inference I'm making. No one's told me this. It's just based on what I've seen over the course of games. I'm not sure he has Eli Manning's complete trust either. We've seen him over the course of some games give up on some routes, drop some passes. I'm not sure he has the full faith and confidence of Eli Manning as a guy that he can go to, that he always knows will be in the right spot, will go out there and make a full effort to catch the ball. We've seen him give up some routes. We've seen Eli be frustrated with that. And quite frankly, you know, maybe it was just Eli not seeing the field and not playing well. But I saw a lot of plays the last few games of the year where Martellus Bennett was an afterthought, and he was open, and it looked like he could have made some plays, and Eli just wasn't going to him. Now, maybe that's just Eli not playing well, not seeing the field, but I think it could also be maybe him not having the full faith in Martellus Bennett to always be in the right place at the right time, run the right route, go out there, stretch out, make the catch, because of some of those routes earlier in the year when he might not have finished it properly or gone out there and really outstretched those arms to make a catch.
Well, if you do bring him back, is that something that Manning and Bennett can work on in the offseason
sure.
to improve on?
You would think.
And if you feel that way, then I think that that would be a reason to bring him back. The other thing to also take into consideration, we talk about changing coordinators on offense and defense and how that hurts the stability of the team. You know, it's been a revolving door with respect to the tight end spot lately. You know, Jake Ballard was in the mix last year. He gets hurt. So now Manning's working with Bennett. Prior to that, we were talking about Shockey and Kevin Ball. loss. You know, Manning needs consistency in terms of the personnel surrounding right. him. So that's why I think the Giants should basically think, first, let's try to bring back a guy that's familiar with the system before, once again, we bring in the fifth tight end in 5 years.
Now, we're going to get to Dave in Rochester in a second, but, Dave, I'm going to let somebody jump you in line here. That's because he's calling all the way from Israel, and his name is Yakir. Yakir, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. My opinion is that I think Reuben Randall was pretty good this year, especially on the long ball. And I think with Hakeem Nicks coming back next year, hopefully strong and not as injured as banged up as he was this year. So I just wanted to see your opinion.
Yeah, Yakir, I agree. I think next year, if you get Nicks back healthy, Reuben Randall can step in and take over that Mario Manningham role where he can stretch the field. If you pay too much attention to Cruz or Nicks, Randall has that athleticism, has that speed to beat you. Not with a short little slant like Ramsey's Barden might, but to beat you with that big play down the field, whether it's a post route, a corner fade, whatever it might be. That's something that Reuben Randall can be very effective at next year, especially considering the progress we saw the last few games.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
All right, Yakir, appreciate
so
the call.
Thanks so much for weighing in.
And send Lance Meadow the long distance, Bill.
Yes, absolutely. We'll cover that.
Yes.
Gladly. Well, we've had plenty of international calls throughout the season and now in the offseason. Nice to see Giants fans well spread out throughout the world.
I wonder if we're going to get Victor in Texas calling back pretty soon.
Yes, I know he was serving throughout the whole course of the season.
I wonder if his deployment's probably over relatively soon, I would think.
I thought he had mentioned that it would run its course until maybe perhaps
March?
The end of the winter, maybe early spring.
Nice. So
if I recall what
he
said.
Hopefully, we'll get Victor back in the mix soon.
Hopefully, we'll get him in the mix soon.
Gunny Day, too, of another former Marine. Would like to get him back in the mix. I haven't heard from him either out in Seattle. It's probably tough for him to call this early in the morning.
Well, he called sometime during the season,
he did.
Right? He was talking about his son, I believe, who is now serving.
Yes, we heard from Gunny Day. So anybody out there that wants to give us a call, you can at 201-939-4513. You can also share your comments or questions on Twitter. We'll check that we haven't looked yet today. We'll check out those Twitter questions in a second at #GiantsChat. But first, very patiently, Dave in Rochester has been waiting. Dave, good morning.
Fellas, good morning. Really, I don't mind getting bumped from the guy from Brazil. It's cool.
Okay, no worries.
And I wanted to talk quarterbacks, and I want to get your opinion on four that I think are relevant. And if you could give me your opinion,
sure.
Is Fitzpatrick in Buffalo, Sanchez, Tebow, Michael Vick, what's going to happen, if anything, with them? And where's my Dottino? I need my Dottino fix.
Yeah, I know, Dave. I'm working on Dottino. We did exchange emails yesterday. I was focused on a couple of different things, so I didn't shore up when he's going to come in to do the show, but we will have Paul Dottino before long. I promise you that.
All right, very good.
But, all right.
On those four quarterbacks is essential. I think the four of those, Fitzpatrick, me being from Rochester, signed, 2 years ago, 5-year, $50 million deal. What's his future, you think?
Well, I think it'll be curious to see with the new regime now in Buffalo. They're going to have a big decision to make on Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm not sure what his guaranteed money situation was in that contract, how much he's owed this year, how much of a cap it they'd have to take.
$24 million guaranteed.
Well, I don't know how much of that has been paid already and how much they would have to, you know, pay up front if they decide to cut Ryan Fitzpatrick. Do I think he's a Super Bowl-winning caliber quarterback? At this point, I'd have to say no. And I'd have to say that Tim Tebow isn't. I'd have to say that Mark Sanchez isn't. And quite frankly, at this point, I don't think Michael Vick is either, the way he's shown his lack of decision-making over the last couple of years and his propensity to get hurt, quite frankly, just can't stay healthy. I don't think any of those guys are quarterback at this point that can lead you to the promised land. As for next year, if you're talking like from a fantasy football standpoint, Fitzpatrick's probably the best guy only because they have some weapons in Buffalo, and at least for now he's the starter. You don't know where Vic's going to end up in those other guys, but I don't love any of those guys as a guy that's going to lead you to the promised land.
Do you see any of those guys moving anywhere, or do you think they're going to go stay for one more year?
I think Vic's going to move. I don't think he returns to Philadelphia. I think Chip Kelly's going to want to start with his own guy there. My guess is that the Bills will keep Ryan Fitzpatrick around at least a while, give the coach a chance to see what he has since they made such a large financial commitment to him. I don't think the Jets have a choice but to keep Mark Sanchez considering the financial commitment they made to him. And I think Tim Tebow is just going to get cut. and we'll see if he picks up somewhere. And I'll throw Alex Smith in there, too. I think the 49ers will trade Alex Smith in the offseason for a draft pick.
Do you see Alex Smith going to the Jets at all? Or Buffalo, for that matter?
I think Alex Smith will be a starting quarterback in this league next year. I think it could be Arizona. I think it could be Buffalo. I think it could be the Jets. I think it potentially could be, maybe one of those teams in the AFC West, maybe Kansas City. Might be a team where he hooks up with to be a quarterback there. Oh, boy. I'm trying to think of some other teams that need a quarterback.
Jacksonville needs a quarterback.
Jacksonville could be another potential landing spot for him. That's a good one.
There's a lot of teams that need quarterbacks, and I think Alex Smith is probably at the top of my list.
How about Philly? Maybe he hooks up with Chip Kelly.
Depending on how much flexibility Philadelphia has to absorb his contract. Remember, they also have Vic on the books right now. So they'd have to get rid
of
him.
I think, though, right?
Well, but, you know, $3 million can go a long way in terms of having some freedom to sign an additional player. But I think that the Jets are going to basically stay as is with Mark Sanchez, unless somebody rescues them at the last minute and is willing to take on Sanchez's contract. He's owed $8.25 million. That's what he's guaranteed next season.
Though I do think they will bring in a veteran quarterback to give him competition. I don't think they can put all their eggs in Sanchez's basket. And I'm not talking about a McElroy. I'm not talking about a Tim Tebow. I'm talking about an experienced,
Dave Girard,
Kyle Orton-style backup quarterback. To, if Mark Sanchez is terrible, you have someone you can at least rely on to bring in there as a backup. And frankly, someone that can pressure Mark Sanchez and you know, give him some motivation to improve. You don't want to hand the guy a starting job who's had those sorts of struggles. And quite frankly, he could probably learn something from some of those veteran quarterbacks that have been around the block a little bit.
They had Mark Brunell there for a couple of years.
Yeah, he wasn't. He was just an old man. He could barely play quarterback at that point.
Wait a minute. You said you want a veteran quarterback in there, John.
I don't want a geriatric quarterback. I want a veteran quarterback. There's a difference.
I'd rather have DeTino as my quarterback.
Well, that would be interesting. DeTino showing Mark Sanchez how to play quarterback. Sign me
That's
up for
right.
that class. Wow.
All right, guys.
All right,
appreciate
it. Thanks.
I love you.
Paul DeTino would be good in the film room of Mark Sanchez, though, watching all that Paul DeTino tape.
Yeah, but whether or not Mark Sanchez could stand DeTino for more than about 10 minutes remains to be seen.
How about this? How about DeTino as Sanchez is like wingman at the club? How about that?
I think DeTino may need more help than Sanchez.
Well, that's why DeTino is Sanchez's wingman. He would get Sanchez's scraps.
I don't even know where I should go with those comments. I'm not
pass?
Even take that alley-oop.
You're passing.
I'm going to pass on that one.
Wow.
Well, I don't want to say something that I'll regret in about 5 minutes.
Disappointing.
I know.
But probably wise.
Yes.
Back to our calls at 201-939-4513. Let's go to Doug in Newark. Doug, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you this morning?
Doing well, Doug. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. What I wanted to address is our linebacker position.
Sure. Yep.
Now I know that I was looking at Nancy Teo, and I've noticed that he ran into a little bit of trouble or whatnot.
What I wanted to know is,
do you think the Giants make a move for Nancy Teo? Because based on, like, his highlights or whatnot, I really like what I've seen from Nancy Teo. So I just want to get you guys' insight on whether or not do you think the Giants should go with an offensive lineman or with Nancy Teo.
I think the Giants are going to pick whatever player gives them the best value at their selection in round one. I don't think they're going to marry themselves to an offensive lineman or to a linebacker. And quite frankly, and I'm not a big combine guy. I'm a guy that'll argue I don't care what a guy runs in the 40 and does his high jump and does his bench press. I want to see what he does on tape in college against other players. That, to me, is what's most important. However, for a guy like Nancy Teo, who played at Notre Dame and who doesn't have the toughest schedule in the world, didn't play in the SEC, didn't play in the Big Ten, didn't play in the Big 12, I want to see some of his raw numbers to see if he's a good enough athlete to succeed at the NFL level. So until we see that, I'm going to be a little leery of Nancy Teo. There are a lot of offensive linemen that are going to go in the first round of this draft. I think that's an option. I think a linebacker, whether it's that Ogletree kid out of Georgia, the Minter kid out of LSU, those guys are potential draft picks for the Giants. But I think we're too early at this point, Doug, to marry yourself to Teo or somebody else. I think there's a long way to go here. And I've seen people predict that after the combine, Teo could drop as far as rounds 2 or 3. So let's let this play a lot before we start marrying ourselves to players, you know?
All right, thanks, man.
You got it, Doug.
Appreciate it, Doug. No problem.
I would like to see how Teo performs in the combine before we really jump the gun and say that this is a guaranteed first-round pick. I can tell you one thing. You know, Doug had asked whether or not the Giants are going to make a move. They're not trading up to go after and chase a player, as you mentioned, John. I think they'll, if he falls to 19 and he performs well at the combine, they'd consider it. But they're not going to go chase him and try to waste other draft picks to go after a guy in the top 10. It's not
going
to happen.
I'll tell you what, though. I think there's going to be a lot of movement in this draft this year. When there aren't a lot of, like, really valuable skill position guys, running backs, wide receivers, quarterbacks in the first round, I think teams sometimes will like to try to trade down because they feel
stockpile.
Like they can get near equal talent at pick, say, 17 as compared to pick 7 or 8. So I think you'll see a lot of guys trading up and down in this draft because of that lack of, you know, players that they would normally try to target. But that being said, while teams will be trying to trade down, I think fewer teams will be trying to trade up because, like you said, there's nobody that you want to target in those early rounds that's, you know, I really need this top wide receiver. Well, that guy's not there this year. I need that top quarterback. It doesn't appear that guy is there this year. Same thing for running back. So I think it'll be an interesting draft this year in terms of how teams handle moving around in that first round.
And last year was the opposite trend, John. A lot of teams looked to move up. The Redskins to grab RG3, the Cowboys to get Claiborne, and even the Bucks to get Martin right before the Giants picked.
Because there were teams that needed guys at certain skill positions, so they targeted them. And that's why it's weird. Teams will be less willing to trade down because there's a big skill position guy they might want, but teams are more willing to trade up. I think it's going to be the opposite this year. Well, you have a lot more teams trying to sell than you'll have other teams trying to buy.
Well, the Giants even mentioned they never expected Reuben Randle to fall to them in that second round. They thought he'd be gone by the time they picked.
Well, they didn't think Prince was going to be there in round 1 2 years ago. They were flabbergasted by it.
More of a reason why, to me, it doesn't make any sense to chase after a guy when you could be surprised in somebody falling down to you. And then it winds up working out maybe in a positive light.
Though sometimes if there's a guy that you love and you think is head and shoulders above everybody else and you think this guy's a difference maker for my franchise and, you know, maybe the team only wants a third-round pick to move up a couple spots or a fourth-round pick to move up a couple spots, then you think about it.
Well, with respect to Teo, way too early to give you an answer on that.
Yes.
I mean, whether he's a must-have. I've got to see the combine, and I've got to see him perform against, you know, other caliber talent. I threw this out yesterday. The one thing that frightens me about Teo, and you mentioned, John, that Notre Dame did not have a very tough schedule, and they squeaked by in a couple of victories. Who knows if they would have even made the championship. Remember that Pittsburgh game in overtime.
He missed field goal in that game. And again, that's Pittsburgh's not exactly the top team in the nation anymore.
Correct. Especially with what's happening with respect to the Big East. And Teo had trouble as well as the rest of the Notre Dame defense in stopping Alabama. And Alabama, to me, is the closest team to an NFL-ready squad. So if he's having trouble wrapping up guys and bringing them down, what's the biggest issue for the Giants right now? Wrapping guys and bringing them down. They had one missed tackle after another. They need to bring in a guy that could stop the run consistently. As it appears right now, if I'm looking at just the Alabama film, I'm not necessarily sold that Teo's the guy. Perhaps my perception of him will change once we see what he does over the next couple of weeks when he works out for teams and has his private tests and everything. And, you know, as far as the girlfriend storyline is concerned, I'm not overwhelmed by that. I mean, it doesn't give him anything positive to ride around with over the next couple of weeks because it hurts his reputation. And I think that the Giants and every other NFL team should take that into consideration because, you know, NFL players have to deal with a lot off the field when you have to get to this level of play and you have to prepare for games as well. So the last thing you need is a guy that's going to come in and be distracted by some of his off-the-field issues. But the Giants need to be more concerned about what can he do 16 weeks of the year. Can he play that middle linebacker spot? Can he come in, buy into the system, and stop the run? If he could do that, they consider it. If he can't, they got to look at other options.
Notre Dame did have a couple of good wins this year at USC, the final game of the regular season, though USC admittedly had a down year this season. That was a pretty good win. Beating Oklahoma in Oklahoma was a good win earlier in the year. Miami wasn't very good this year. That wasn't a very impressive win. Stanford was okay. That's a decent win. But again, it took overtime for them to beat Stanford, which is nothing to write home about. That game was also in Notre Dame. Michigan and Michigan State, neither one of those teams I thought were very good this year. So those aren't very impressive victories. They barely beat Purdue. I can't get excited about that. Barely beat Pitt that game in overtime, and they beat Navy, Wake Forest, Boston College, BYU. You can't get excited about a lot of these wins. Barely beat BYU, by the way. 17-14 in that game.
A lot of close games for Notre Dame.
And they caught a lot of breaks, too, over the course of the year.
Which happens in the NFL as well. See, it's not just one level of football. It's all over.
Luck of the Irish, right?
There we go.
201-939-4513. Jeff in Rhode Island. Jeff, what's going on, pal?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Jeff. What's happening?
Good. I think in regards to Kiwi, let's just plug him in at defensive end, his natural position, and just leave him there.
Agreed.
In my mind, it's not open for discussion, okay? You know, I know it's kind of early to talk about the draft, but what we need to do is somehow or other, we need an impact player on the defensive line or the offensive line or maybe possibly a linebacker, you know, if that player becomes available somehow. We just need upgrading, I think, especially on the offensive line. You know, I remember some years ago when we had drafted Jumbo Elliott and William Roberts in the same draft. I mean, one of these days we have to spend a premium pick on that and, you know, get ourselves a good road grader or, you know, a really, really good outstanding offensive lineman. I think it's just time for it to happen. I mean, I know the Giants' philosophy is always go with the best player available, but, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. But those are my three main areas of concern, is the offensive line, defensive line, and linebacker. So
yeah,
what
Jeff,
do you guys think?
Yeah, I think you're right, and we've talked a lot about linebacker and offensive line here. But I think a sleeper pick in that first round could be a defensive end, where the Giants have gone in a lot of past seasons to try to get in that pass rusher. And, again, if they do lose Osu Manure in free agency, which, you know, if you listen to OC talk about it, that would seem to be the case, that they will need to replenish that position. Even moving Kiwanuka to defensive end, that helps. But considering Justin Tuck seems to have hit his peak and might be on the decline a little bit, you want to try to build up that stockpile of pass rushers. I'm not sure you can rely on Adrian Tracy or Adewale Ajomo quite at this point. So if you want to bring in another defensive end pass rusher or even a disruptive defensive tackle to pair with Joseph Nkanti, I can buy that. But I think a defensive end would be more likely than a defensive tackle, considering you have young guys like Marvin Austin, like Marcus Kuhn, like Linville Joseph, and then you have Chris Canty, a veteran there. I think there's more room at defensive end at this point than there is at a defensive tackle.
What was your opinion on Marvin Austin's play overall this year?
Well, I think it was disturbing that he was a healthy scratch more often than not, Jeff. I think that's a pretty telling statistic, even if it's not a statistic technically. I mean, if he's healthy enough to get on the field and they're not playing him, that says something about what they're seeing in practice.
Well, how about this? Marcus Kuhn, a seventh-round pick that's 26-year-old out of Germany, who clearly doesn't have a ton of football experience, period. He's getting playing time over your second-round draft pick last year. That's not a good sign.
Yeah, I also think we may need to be looking at the running back position as well, because, you know, we all know Bradshaw is a real tough dude. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, maybe he's seen his better days. I don't know. The poor guy's just beat up. And I think that's another area that we seriously need to look at.
All right, Jeff, thanks for the call, man. And I think you could go running back late in the draft, just not early. Consider you used a first-round pick on David Wolfson last year.
See how healthy Andre Brown is heading into training camp. I mean, he's still certainly a viable option. You have David Wilson. And, you know, I don't know, maybe they saw something out of Lumpkin or Terrain. I'm not saying that that's going to be a huge spark plug, but a veteran guy that could still contribute as a third-down back. And just real quickly, with respect to the offensive line, I know you touched on defensive end could be a sleeper pick for them in the first round. I still think there's a tremendous urgency on that offensive line coming into the draft, depending on what happens via free agency. And what I mean is Booth and Beattie. Are they going to take care of business and re-sign their guys? If they're not, they have to restock that O-line, or else they're going to be in trouble.
Well, yeah. If you have two huge holes, and depending on what they decide to do with David Deal, potentially three holes at right tackle, left tackle, and guard, and left guard on that offensive line, you're going to have a lot of holes to fill. But we'll see what happens with free agency. That comes before the draft. So, obviously, as we get past the beginning of March when free agency begins, we'll have a better idea of what's going to happen there. Final call of the show at 201-939-4513. Antonio's in Manhattan. Antonio, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I just have one quick comment about the linebackers and everybody talking about Manti Te'o and stuff like that.
Sure.
I just think that we shouldn't draft a linebacker as a first-round draft because I don't think any of them would be head and shoulders over our current middle linebacker. I think that we should go somewhere else. And I think that even if we try Matt Titeo or any other linebackers from Georgia, it won't be as good as or it won't be head and shoulders over Blackburn. I mean Chase.
Well, where do you think they should go then if they don't go linebacker? Just out of curiosity.
That's a good question. You know, honestly, I think they should address the secondary. I think it's just that we have good players in the secondary, but we just need depth. We don't have as much as we need. So I think we just need more secondary out there. So just draft a whole bunch. We need to go. I think this whole draft just needs to be a lot of defensive players.
Well, Antonio, remember, too, you don't have to go inside linebacker necessarily. You could draft Sam, a strong side linebacker, to replace Kiwanuka, put Kiwanuka back on the defensive line. You really don't have anybody on the roster that can play that strong side linebacker spot. You draft a kid, just an example, that Ogletree kid out of Georgia who's an outside linebacker. You might be able to get an impact player there that would fill a hole and be an improvement at that spot on your roster.
And that's what I think that we should address. Actually, that's the thing we should do, actually, is go outside linebackers and not worry too much about middle linebackers. Because I think we have that. That's our best position right now, middle linebacker. We have depth, and then we also have a really good player right now. I don't think that we should be addressing the outside linebackers, I think, in our opinion.
And appreciate the phone call, Antonio. And another name I'm going to throw out there, as Antonio's saying that they may have options already on the roster. You know, this is another big offseason for Mark Herzlick. We threw out his name last offseason. You know, maybe the Giants are going to look at their internal options very carefully before they determine what they want to do in the draft. And maybe there's promise in Mark Herzlick. Disappointing somewhat. Many people thought he'd beat out Chase Blackburn. He would be the guy. Did not necessarily follow that script this season. Perhaps this is his offseason. Perhaps this is his opportunity to make a statement, build confidence in the coaches, grab that, and move with it through the rest of the season. Just going to throw that out there to Giants fans. Your option that you need to turn to could very well still be on the roster, just as an answer to depth on the defensive end spot could already be on the roster, as you threw out earlier with Adewale Ojomo or Adrian Tracy. They may have the opportunity to take on larger roles.
I agree. But I think you do, one way or the other, whether it's Herzlick or if you decide he's not the answer and you go somewhere else, you do need some youth and depth behind Chase Blackburn. He's a veteran. He's been in the league a long time. He can't play that middle linebacker spot forever. So you want to try to develop somebody at that position one way or the other.
Absolutely. They need to certainly restock no matter who they lose and who they re-sign.
All right. That's it, Lance. Appreciate it as always, my friend.
Be back in the mix tomorrow.
Yes, and I will try to get the Tino on. I'm doing a bad job, I know.
Well, he's got to bring, you know, something to the table as well. He's got to meet you halfway.
I also have an idea. I have an idea for a special surprise guest over the next couple of days. I'm going to send that a text to somebody, and we're going to see if I can get somebody to come on.
Oh, this sounds intriguing.
No, I think you'll like it.
Okay.
All right.
Little tease to the listeners.
Little tease.
All right.
Blind tease.
Could live with that.
All right. Tomorrow, 9:30. Be here. Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmelk, Lance Meadow. Every weekday morning presented by Andrew Mark. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
Have a good one.